adjourn, the Honourable Launders was going to wanted to be heard. Honourable Launders, to speak in chapter. Can you just repeat yourself?
Chapter 8 deals with the transfer of records to our National Archive, and then Chapter 9 deals with the release of declassified information to the public, including the establishment of our National Declassification Database. I just want to highlight some anomalies that are in Clause 26 in relation to Clauses 27 and 29, Chairperson, which may need to be addressed by the state law advisors and the drafters. Chairperson, it says that the head of organ of state must review classified information before it is transferred to our National Archives. And then it says, at the date on which this act takes effect, public records, including records marked classified that are transferred to our National Archives or other archives, are considered to be automatically declassified. It's an important subclause. Later on in Clause 26, it says under sub 4, classified records held by the National Archives or other archives at the commencement of this act, which have been classified for less than 20 years, are subject to the provisions of this act, which is somewhat of a contradiction, certainly an anomaly, because earlier it says, when you send the records to the archives, they're automatically declassified. And then later, Chairperson, under 6, it says, where an organ of state fails to act in terms of Part B of Chapter 6, classified records are regarded as being automatically declassified at the expiry of the relevant protection period referred to in Section 20. The relevant protection period referred to in Section 20 is 20 years. And I think I referred to this on another occasion, Chairperson, where information may not remain classified for longer than a 20-year period unless the head of organ of state deems otherwise. All right? And then, Chairperson, so they are regarded as being automatically declassified. But at the same time, it is saying, no, they're not declassified. And then 7, Chairperson, perhaps is the clincher. There is no onus or obligation on the part of archives or other archives to advise or notify organs of state with regard to their responsibilities and obligations with regard to classified information in the position of the National Archives. Chairperson, then, if we move on to Clause 27, it says there is no automatic disclosure of declassified information to the public unless that information has been placed into the National Declassification Database as provided for in Section 29. So earlier they said, when you send classified information to the archives, they're deemed declassified. And then later, yeah, they say, information that is in the National Declassification Database is not automatically disclosed, even when it's declassified. So Chair, this is just some of the anomalies that we need to address. I'm not sure what the drafters intended, but I think you can understand the anomalies and contradictions that I've referred to. I also referred on another occasion, Chairperson, to the fact that Defense Intelligence and the police have their own archives. The bill seeks to address that. What is not clear, however, is whether the information that is in the National Archives being automatically declassified is the same as the information in Defense Intelligence Archives and the Police Archives also automatically declassified. That we need clarity on. Certainly from the bill, it's not clear. But they do say in 29, Chairperson, that the Department of Defense Archive Repository is part of the National Declassification Database. So Chairperson, 29.7, of course, again, I also need clarity on. No declassified information may be placed in the National Declassification Database if access to such information may be refused in terms of the promotion of access to information. Well, I think what they're saying then is if stuff is in the database, it can't be refused. If you read 7, that's essentially what it says. Anything that's in the database can't be refused if you request it in terms of FIRE. That's what 7 says. Although earlier they say there's no automatic disclosure of declassified information in the database. So, Chairperson, someone needs to help us here. Otherwise, we're going to be at loggerheads with one another for days and nights on end.
Chair, we've just been sharing the view that this must have been drafted by lawyers. Because we have never understood it either. No, we have never understood the contradictions either. And I think surely we need Dr. Dumini to come and address us, and maybe Vern Harris, who has an interest in archives, or somebody. Oh, perhaps. A combination of the two.
Is a point been made on that?
Yeah, actually, I do really think that we need some expert elucidation. And Dr. Dumini, whom I don't know but has been before you, addressed you. I've read his presentation. I've read a very interesting long op-ed piece he wrote more than a year ago about their preparation by way of study in America to create the declassification database. And I think we could only benefit, and I'm not sure we can do it without expert input. Dr. Annelie Lotriet of the DA is ready to join us whenever you want, but that's on the other aspect of archival activity, the public record keeping. I'm inviting her, and will urge you to listen to her because she's extremely good, and she will help us on that aspect if you're interested.
Now I hear the Honourable Van Wyk now.
Chairperson, I think the Honourable Honest raised the important point that obviously we all agree with that needs to be addressed, but I also think we need to take in consideration that I think that we've identified the need for transitional arrangements, and that's exactly because it's such a mess where it is there. And maybe some of these things can be properly addressed through proper transitional arrangements surrounding the different acts that are in fact in place now and have classified information up to now. So I don't know, that's maybe one other way of looking at trying to solve the problem as well.
Mania.
Chair, the point raised by the Honourable Landers is an important point. The fact that there are, that in the sector we're dealing with several different archives. We have the National Archives, the Defence Archives, the Police Archives, and presumably the Intelligence Services have archives. Now, once documents are, documents are declassified, is it the intention that they then go to the National Archives? I mean, we need to be clear on that. It would seem to me that once documents are declassified, they would need to be removed from, for example, the Defense Archive and go to the National Archive.
Honorable Fundway.
It's correct. I mean, I think that is the intention, is that's what should happen in the end. But Dennis here at the back just made a comment that's also true. We're still thinking about hard documents, you know, and a lot of it is actually internet, on disk, etc., digital documents. But the reality is there's enough hard copies as well. We mustn't forget that. I can tell you that the police are at this stage. Remember, State departments have been told that they cannot destroy any documents. There was And the police, for instance, are struggling. They don't have space anymore to keep dockets and to keep files and things that actually they should be able to send through on this process. And I'm sure if that's the case with them, it's the case with other departments as well. So while it's digital documents, the reality is there are also the hard copy documents that we must take in consideration.
I think it's a mistake to think that the archives deal only with paper. It's not the case. Yeah.
The Honourable Embassy.
Director, I'm talking with the benefit of a great deal of ignorance, not knowing well the subject matter of National Archives, but when I read this clause, and I heard what General Lander said, and as I read it again, it seems to be making sense to me. You've got classified records held by the department, by the National Archives at the commencement of this act. Four. And you've got a rule there. You've got rules for what is not held there now and gets there. And one may agree or disagree with those rules, but they seem to be consistent. I don't see an inconsistency. One may disagree, but there is a logic to this. And at least it seems to me making some sense, and I don't find it objectionable either.
Let me take Mr. Ambrosini through it. Sub 2 says, records marked classified that are transferred to the archives are considered to be automatically classified. So that's it, right? And then 6 says, classified records in possession of the National Archives are regarded as being automatically declassified only at the expiry of the relevant protection period in section 20. Sub 6. Well, you've got the wrong sub 6.
My sub 6 reads, where an organ of state fails to act in terms of Part B of Chapter 6.
I'm reading from the original bill.
If you are reading from the original bill, then there is no change, there aren't any changes there. No, I don't know. Honorable Ebersini admitted now that his computer had the wrong version.
Chairperson. Chair, sub 2 says, records marked classified that are transferred to the archives are considered to be automatically declassified. And then sub 6 then says, no, they can only be declassified after the 20-year period.
Are you talking 26 now?
Yes, Chairperson. That is the point I'm making, Chairperson.
Interested in the reading because it seems to be clear to me. What is with elsewhere but in the National Archives gets declassified when it gets there? 2. What it is in the National Archives now gets declassified after 20 years? 4. Yes.
Public records, including
existing records marked classified that are transferred to the National Archives
yes.
are considered to be fraudulent.
Exactly. So when you send something to the National Archives, yes. it's a fact of just because you sent it there, you declassify, which makes sense. If you post it on the newspaper, it's declassified. What is in the National Archives now is classified if it is less than 20 years. If it is more than 20 years, under four, classified records held by the National Archives, all the National Archives at the commencement of this Act, which have been classified for less than 20 years, are subject to the provisions of this Act. Yes. Which means they remain classified until they are declassified. No, because they are already there, which are held by the State Archives. And when they get, okay, when they get there, they are not going to be classified. When they get there, I'm sorry, can I finish? When they get there,
honorable members,
when they get there, they will not be classified. So obviously, four doesn't refer to what is received in terms of two, because that's not classified. Those are deemed declassified. And then six relates to things which should have been declassified when an organ of state fails to act in terms of six or Part B of Chapter 6. Part B of Chapter 6 is the one that relates to declassification, if I were, yes, declassification. So, when an organ of state fails to declassify, the classified record in possession of a national archive or other archive are regarding automatically declassified as files of the relevant protection period referred to in Section 20, which is the 20 years. So it all makes sense. If it is more than 20 years and has not been declassified, it's in the National Archives, it's declassified. If it is in terms of six, if it is less than 20 years in terms of four, it remains classified. If it gets transferred from an organ of state to the National Archives, it is de facto classified. This refers to what is already in the National Archives prior to the commencement of this Act. That's the way I read it and the way it seems to be making sense to me.
I have Honorable Swat, Honorable Wendy, Honorable Schnabel, and then Honorable Mugabe-Dabi.
I think, Chair, the critical part of 26.2 is at the date on which this Act takes place. At that point, you read, the documents are then transferred. So it's not retrospective. The documents were transferred. So I'm in agreement with you. It's very clumsily put. But you've got very... The first one is when this Act takes place, the documents that are then transferred are considered automatic. Then you've got under four, you've got classified records that are already within National Archives. Classified records held, in other words, already held in the past tense, or other archives which have been classified, and those have been classified for less than 20 years are subject to the provisions of this Act. So they then can go through the process here of declassification or continued classification. And I think that is the two differences between 2 and 4. But I agree that it's very clumsily put. We can read it to agree, but I'm sure we can make it clearer as to what our intention.
Honorable Mania.
Thank you, Chair. I think what the Honorable Ombudsman is trying to say is that Honorable Abai touched on it. She said that the police got files and they
Honorable Honorable Launders, Honorable Caragelli, finish.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
I think we've been tasked with a very not so easy task. We have inherited this act from so many different acts. So maybe we need to ask ourselves, how do we want this thing to look like? Without referring to what was said in 1974 and 1990, because it's so dear, my God. And that's why I wanted to second the issue of those who are practicing in National Archives. Can't we invite them and let's come with something that is alive and realistic and we correct that?
There are two things. One, we need to be educated around this issue. And second thing is we need to decide what it is that we want. And then we need to marry the two and then tell the state or advisors that this is what we want, go and draft or something new. I think we continuing with this is not going to help.
We support the proposal.
Has anybody taken the trouble to look at the National Archives and Record Services of South African Act? Honourable members taken the trouble to look at the Act, 43 of 1996. No, not quite that. Have you taken the opportunity to look at it? I'm not sure what it is you want on it. You want to go back to public hearings, or what is it? What is it that you want?
I don't know who drafted for this 26 to 29. Whoever that person or persons are should help us, because obviously they understand what they put there. But we are struggling. I'm struggling. It doesn't help. So, Chair, that's all. And then, as the Honourable Annelies van Wyk says, once we've heard that person, we can then decide what it is we want.
Can you take us, what is the next point on you? Because it seems that you're asking me now to arrange for some formal you want some formal presentation now from some expert in the field. I'm not sure whether you're going to get the drafter, you know. Drafters, many people, I would imagine. Honourable Mayor?
Chair, I was really going to propose that we arrange a meeting with the National Archives, if possible, with the drafters and the section.
Father, is this particular chapter then flagged until such time or not? Then it will be so, Honourable Member. I just remind you to keep in mind that the factual position is that the archives does have information that is classified presently, and it also does have information that is not classified. There are a number of cases, if you follow the legal report, you'll see there's a number of cases where the archives is in court all the time for refusing to release information in terms of fire. You'll see there's a number of cases relating to them spending time in court because they are claiming that the refusal to provide the information was justified in terms of those clauses in PIA, where the information officer can either use his discretion or he's obliged not to release the information because of his qualification. See that in PIA. So it's quite clear that the archives, as it presently stands, does also store information that is classified. I think that was the point that I was trying to make it. Can we then move on?
Then chapter 10 was left at the offences and penalties, and then chapter 12 deals with protection of information in courts. We have said that when it comes to offences and penalties, the drafted notice is first by moving penalties. Just a little afraid of moving forward, because much of what has been changed, changed quite a lot, it may actually impact on what is contained in the clause that you we find ourselves going around with rehashing discussion and debate of what we already did the outcome. Which is why yesterday I tried to say that perhaps it's time for us to receive from the draft the working document setting out all the changes forward, acknowledging that they are still in the process of drafting the applications clause, and of course the acknowledging it. So I don't know. I'm sort of pointing to my own discouragement.
I'm a Romanian.
I really just want to introduce this as an idea for consideration. You will recall that in 2008, interested in the public mission say the section that he was a controversial section, particularly because it gave, at least in the this draft of the bill, very wide powers of agency to monitor the implementation of information policy throughout the controversial sector. Now, in 2008, it was in fact the original drafter's view that these functions should not be carried out by the agency. It was their view that it should be carried out by an independent information protection oversight authority. That idea was not included in the legislation because of the administrative burden that, bear in mind, at that time discussed with all the funding. The criticism of Section 30 is really that the implementation and monitoring of information policies is, first of all, not independent. Of course, it's carried out by the executive branch of government and the agency. And secondly, that there are exceptions, and the exceptions are the Defence Force, the SAP, and the agency itself. My proposal would be that we ought to consider importing these functions, or some of these functions, into the classification review pattern. Simply, I put it on the table into consideration.
I don't think what the Honourable Mania is saying is differing that much from what the Honourable Landers is saying. The Honourable Landers is saying that because of the creation, for instance, of the review panel, a lot of what you read under the city are now going to be done by the review panel. There are those elements, few as they may be, of the opt-in department that we must talk about and we must see how we solve it. And I think that's why the Honourable Landers said, in a way, it's dangerous for us to look at this without taking into consideration the bill as it now stands, because this there's been too many changes around the bill.
Mr. Maynard is very well to remind us of that thinking on the part of the original government. And do not forget that the independent body that they wanted in the information protection oversight, don't forget we are in the process of creating under the protection of private personal information and information regulator, whose job will precisely be to protect that people's databases. And that's not just private sector, it includes state bodies unless they're excluded for security purposes. But in as much as your bill still tries to give the agency the job it had under this, or it has under myth of checking people's information practices. That job is being transferred to the information regulator, which we are creating under the protection of personal information. And this bill should deal only with the classified stuff, and therefore it's logical that the review panel deals with the classified aspects thereof. So the thing might prove itself.
Yes. point that we made in 30 years that in terms of the implementation of ownership conducted by the agency, that on participation can be used for the purposes of ownership. Well, there you are. I went to Chicago.
Restriction. If you look at subclause 2 in this section, it is already saying that two of your security entities, the agency mustn't interfere with them. I suppose the presumption is that they already know about those things that the agency might tell them about. And so what really is left? Really needs your intelligence community. So yes, there is a need to relook at this because the narrowing down of the application of the poll does change a lot of what is. And I think the fear that the Honorable Romania and his colleagues have that the agency is now going to infiltrate all organs of state. Perhaps no longer a realistic one, particularly because the organs of state that you were so worried about have all mostly been eliminated. Those thousands of organs of state that you were worried about no longer tend to be involved in this very narrow process. So I think one would have expected the fear to have been reduced proportionately to the concession of the application of the clause. That the fear of the Honorable Mania and his colleagues would have been reduced. Because the fear that they originally had was that all organs of state, you have your national agency moving around there trying to do things that this clause is setting up was perhaps untenable. But that fear, I think, if they still hold the fear, it should have been reduced proportionately to the fact that the application clause has been reduced. And I'd like to hear whether that is indeed so, because perhaps if you give some indication, then the rest of the way forward on this thing, when one looks at what this study should actually be, it would be easy. Yes, on
well, I tell you why I'm so gripped by fear. Amongst other things, the regulation section 48. Which is going to allow the Minister of State Security to make regulations governing information, applies both to valuable, that's the ordinary information, and to classified information, just like section, just like clause 30, it applies to both things. And this draft clause says he can make regulations about all sorts of things which sound just like the list system. The controls and measures required to effectively protect, including the physical security, information communications, technology security, the direct job of the new regulator, technical surveillance, countermeasures, contingency planning for the protection of information, I can read you the rest, but it sounds exactly like the myth. And that is why it has always been our fear and remains so, that especially if you allow the Minister of State Security to make subordinate estimates, and you allow him this kind of scope, you're simply going to see the myth replicated. Because I would imagine that the intelligence services must quite enjoy having the kind of access they have to absolutely everything, because they do have under the myth, which is simply a fallacy, the right to guide, inspect, monitor, and audit the ordinary record keeping of every government department, plus a few private institutions, which of course we don't know which they are. But so the regulation section would have to be cleaned up just like.
I just hear the humble mania, then the humble front right now.
Chair, you referred to one concern, that there was a concern that she was not referred to, and that is the problem of the Defence Force and the police and the agency being exempt from external review and monitoring in terms of the drafting of Section 30. It may be possible, and I understand from the Honourable Landy that we will revisit the thought that it may be possible for us to look at expanding the functions of the review panel to monitor compliance in the agency, the police, and in the Defence Force.
That's exactly why I made the point. The review panel is going to do this now. And they're going to do it across the board. Defence, police, intelligence, and those who are off east. They're going to do it. And that's why I pleaded, and I thought that's what the Honourable Lana said as well. Let's take everything that we've changed in consideration. I mean, they're no longer supplying annual reports to the minister. All these things have changed. We have put other bodies in place to do some of these things. And we need to relook if we've missed certain things, if there are certain things that we are still need to do, then we must say so. But there are things that we can take out of here that are already with the review panel. There are things that are no longer necessary because of changes that we've made to the bill. And unless we have the full script of the bill as we've changed it now, I think it's dangerous for us to interact with this clause at this stage. And my fear, my argument is not based on fear for whatever the intelligence agencies do, what they need to do, they need to do. But it's the reality of the changes that we've made.
Honourable members, so the proposal is who's to do the work? So, no further debate on this. I'm issuing an introduction to the State Law Advisor. Mm-hmm. I always take it out on you. Sorry about this, Ms. Boyce. Chapter 10, Clause 30. The responsibilities of the agency. The proposal is that contained in that chapter, excluding your 31, are functions that we have already allocated to the review panel. You ought to look and see whether that is so. Identify those clauses and draw our attention to that. You are also to check and see which of these provisions or these sub-provisions in Clause 30 apply specifically to valuable information. effect of subclause 2, section clause 3, subsection 2, where the agency, where the police and the defense force are admitted or excused from the oversight that the agency is exercising there. You want to look at that. Advise us on what would be an appropriate manner in which to capture that subsection to if it is still necessary to retain. I will also advise you to go through each and every of the alphabetical subclauses, the A to H. May well be that some of those clauses apply to valuable information, the subclauses and most classified information. Vengeance is a last resort. Depending on how you see things, perhaps you will advise on the question of section of clause 31, given the fact that the application clause is going to be drastically reduced, because 31 envisages a dispute between the agency and the organs of state. Now between the agency and another agency that is incorporated in Chapter 11 might render a different type of perspective. Just look at that perhaps after you are able to deal with 30, you might have some advice on 31. How many of them that you have been listening to? Are you in agreement with the instructions that I have made? I have been particularly slow so that we are clear on what it is that we are expecting. We don't have an argument once the presentation is brought to the committee. Is there anything you want to add to what I said on in terms of the instruction, not in terms of the detail?
Just to mention, you dealt not only with clause 30 but also with clause 31, the dispute resolution mechanism. And you said that the dispute now is likely to be between different organs of state. I'd just like to remind our committee that certainly the Human Rights Commission, and I think another presentation, made the point that the minister, in this case the Minister for State Security, might have a vested interest in this cluster. And the proposal was that the dispute resolution minister, if you like, be the Minister of Justice. It seemed to me that that was a sensible proposal.
You got busy at that.
Honourable member, that I merely ask that we be given advice on the matter, so there's no need to debate the matter here. The proposal will come back in terms of the instruction, the presentation will be made, and then you will engage each other on the proposal. Honourable members, can we go on to the offences clauses now?
Mr. Chairman, it will conclude on 32.
Honourable Rossini, I must ask you seriously to update your database where it seems to be outdated. These words are very much consistent with the words that you read in your international best practice espionage offensive. I don't think the word espionage is foreign to you. You will know that in most countries this is, apart from murder, the most important and most serious offense that you can commit against a particular country. The further you go east, the more violent becomes the sentence. So that in some countries you simply just disappear if you committed such an offense. But certainly, you would be hanged, you would be shot, you would be, many, many, many bad things would be done to you. If you were found guilty of espionage. So it's not a Mickey Mouse offense on your majesties. And it is right on top of our list of offenses. I think we need to get that right. So can we start there and start moving down?
Get the ball rolling.
The offense of espionage.
And thank you.
The Honorable sorry, the Honorable Abrasini, the Honorable Swatter.
Okay, I want to address you on a number of things, if I may, Mr. Chairman. And the first comment relates to espionage as well as all the other offenses contemplated in this bill. There is something unusual here, which I, for one, have never seen before. Somebody is convicted if somebody knew or should have known that the relevant document was classified, which is fine. And then it is added or suspected. Now, again, you said very correctly this is not a Mickey Mouse offense. So one should not turn the entire thing into a Mickey Mouse exercise. Suspecting is not a legal term. It is over and above should have known. It is, again, legally intelligentese legalese, derived from a mindset of wanting to turn every citizen into somebody who needs to suspect his neighbors and his friends. And there are other provisions along this line. So I want to make the point now, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, so that I can refer to it later in respect of other clauses. There is this mindset which tends to enlist the cooperation of the citizen in doing the work of the agency, in requiring the citizen to suspect that something could.
Honorable Number 3, to summarize the thing for us and give us the conclusion. Because I'm not with him and I don't know, he said we are on 32 and I'm expecting us to start 32 together. And where is the suspicion and other things there?
It is in 32.1A, which is marked there, and I was reading from it.
Can you just, when you, Honorable Members, when you refer to 32, just refer to what line or what?
Well, it's 32.1A, but it goes through each and every of them. So that's why I'm making the point now. and perhaps we can have a discussion about now, so we don't do it every time, but the grounds of the offense, of this specific offense, or the of all the others, without wanting to be didactic, in each offense, in each crime, there are two elements, the physical conduct and the psychological aspect, the mens rea, what you need to do. Usually one needs to be willing to commit the crime. This is taken one step forward. It's what criminalists call a specific intent crime. You must have known. You must have not only had the intention of bringing about the conduct, but you must have known specific aspects of that which affected your conduct. Or you should have known. Many crimes are like that. This, for the first time I've seen in my life, goes one step farther and it gets you in jail. If you didn't know, if you should have not reasonably known, but you must have suspected. This is completely unreasonable.
Honorable Stubbs? Honorable Swat, and then the Honorable Stubber, and then the Honorable Smuts. Can you proceed, Honorable Swat?
Chair, I think it's very important when we start looking at the offences, firstly that we are creating the offence of espionage that did not exist until now. We had the offence of high treason. And I think we need to ensure, the law advisors need to ensure that the elements are similar, that we cover that as well. That is the first point. The second point is we've already looked at the issue of the minimum sentences, and we need to then look at what is a suitable. We've suggested removing the minimum sentences, then we fall back on the not exceeding 25 years, not exceeding 15 years in 1A, 1B. We would also suggest that we consider lower down at the level. We appreciate that the espionage offence that is being created is a very serious offence, but lower down, when we under 32.3, when we are looking at the communication of information which is classified at the lowest level as confidential classification. And a lot of information will be classified confidential. But that now falls under the espionage offence, which is very serious. We would suggest there that one looks at the alternative of inserting the alternative of a fine when we look at the proportionality. Chair, those are our initial views on this. I seem to recall this is the one aspect where it was suggested that the minimum sentence should be retained under 32.1. And I don't think if we narrowly define that, and that is not a major concern because we do appreciate it is a very serious offence to communicate top secret information. Bearing in mind, we have narrowed down the ambit of the bill. And again, it depends on the outcome of our discussions around the definition of what is national security. I think that is an aspect that one can look at. But the concern is, again, just my limited reading, the equation of espionage would be high treason previously. And I see the different levels are 32.1, 32.2, 32.3. The lowest levels of communicating confidential information to amount to high treason seems to be a bit exorbitant and very, very heavy. heavily handed. So that is something that we need to relook at, and at some stage when we deal with the offences clause, we're obviously going to have the discussion again around the issue of various defences to these offences, which will include a discussion around public interest defence. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I've been covered by Honourable Swartz in 33.
Chair, I have so far accepted on the argument that we do not have an espionage statute in South Africa, that there may arguably be a need for such a thing. What we have is common law treason. Now I wonder if we shouldn't ask ourselves whether, in fact, this is the place for such a thing. And I was struck by some reading that was referred to me by the fact that in America, the Espionage Act of 1917 has only four times in almost a century been used at all to prosecute leakers or whistleblowers. And a law professor there said, the Espionage Act was meant to deal with classic espionage, not publication. The comment was prompted by the fact that one Thomas Drake of the National Security Agency is currently being prosecuted for giving to a newspaper information about bad administration and stuff. Is this law, which deals with the classification of information, is it really the right place? And could we not even consider leaving to someone else at another time the question whether we do in fact need a statute if we've managed okay under the common law so far? And then the other thing that I just wanted to bring to your attention, because Mr. Mania will talk about the concrete things that we want, is, you know, it's so instructive to do what the chairman always does, to go and look at why this bill takes the shape it takes, why certain provisions were written the way they were by the original drafters. And to me, the most interesting thing of all concerns both the espionage offence and the hostile activity offence, because they are sui generis. They're two separate offences, which they're not like the rest of the law. They, too interestingly, were originally drafted without any reference to classified information. They had nothing to do with classified information. You will not find the words classified information in the 2008. What the 2008 did have was intention, or mens rea, at least. And what has happened in the 2010, and I think that Mr. Enver Daniels and these people did right in bringing the idea of classified information back in, so that your espionage offence at the three levels, 25 years, 15 years, 5 years in prison, at least now they rest on the idea that it's classified information that you are obtaining and communicating in order to benefit another state. The 2008 version, Llewellyn, didn't have classified information in it. But it did have intent. Likewise with the hostile activity. In the argument, I've read the Curry and Clarin Nelson Mandela Foundation evaluation document, which came out in June now, 17 June. And they argue under the hostile activity offences that it's in fact safer and gives you a de facto public interest defence to make everything in hostile activity offences revolve around the idea of harm. But we'll talk about that when we talk about hostile activity offences. But that is where this comes from. So I ask two questions. One, is this really the place for an espionage offence? And the hostile activities, I would like to move later on that we delete altogether, because heaven only knows what it means at all, and it doesn't belong here. And that is the one that would put journalists in jail for 25 years, for something which is not even defined, and heaven only knows what it is. But may I leave the espionage there? Should we really have it at all? and Mr. Mania are going to talk to you about the pot.
I did not recognize him. I recognize Honorable Landers. These Honorable Mania wanted to be heard at some time.
I simply raised my hand in response to the Honorable Dean Smith's assertion that the 2008 vote, which I have in hand, does not refer to classified information. Page 13 of the book is precisely what is contained in the 2010 book, Classification of Information, under Chapter 6, Part A, Classification, Nature of Classified, Method of Classifying Information, Classification Level, and so on. Okay.
Yes.
It doesn't deal with classified information.
Honorable members. Honorable members, am I no longer cheering you? Honorable Smith, I didn't recognize you, Honorable Smith. Please. You're now deteriorating again into a level of disorder. Honorable members, can I help you think now? Because I see you beginning to deviate in your thinking. The whole question of PIA not dealing with classified information became a problem because the secrets that you do agree government can have was not protected. Okay. And the only way you can protect a secret is to have a penalty for the person that discloses the secret. Hence, we are dealing now with a very bill that is meant to cover that particular snuff, not from the valuable information. We're dealing with a bill that is trying to protect secrets by classifying it. And then once you classify it, you have to, the only way you can protect it is to say that if anybody messes around with it, it needs to be punished. So, if you understand that simple context, in that context, you will understand that if you accept that the secret has been legitimately classified, what are you going to do with somebody that takes that secret and sells it to somebody else? Now, he can be dealing with one of three of the categories of secrets. He could be dealing with your confidential one. And what we say in terms of confidential, that is the last one, you sell that thing or you do something with that secret you're not supposed to do, you're going to go to jail for 5 years. If you deal with one that was secret, you go to jail for 15 years if you sell that thing or if you intend to sell it. And if you are dealing with a top secret one, you're going to go to jail for 25 years. We won't shoot you. Okay. What happens in other countries. We put you in jail for 25 years if you're found guilty. That is the essence of what we're trying to capture. Whether the mens rea or the unlawfulness is not properly captured here. The point here is very simple. When you're dealing with classified information, this is the most serious crime that you can commit when dealing with classified information. Is to take it and actually go and sell it to somebody else. And this is what is being attempted to be captured here. Now, surely the principle, there can be nothing wrong with the principle. I was expecting honorable members to say, and the honorable Abbasini did start and say, well, the mens rea is not here. Well, then, who does it with intention? You had the intention. sorry, I misunderstood you. If the crime is not properly described here, all crimes have got elements, and it is when you go to court, these elements need to be proved. And if the elements aren't here, then say so, and then we fix it. But to say that this thing can't exist is to say that it's a pointless classifying information. Because the whole purpose of classifying your information, your secret, is to protect it. And it doesn't help you to say, put passwords on your computer. If you print the thing, put it in a strong box, lock it up in a safe with that's got two or three locks on it. It's not going to help you. You need people. You have to add in a protection that discourages people from doing this thing. They must know. Unifiddle people working with this thing must know that if they do sell it, the consequences are so serious they are going to go to jail for a long time. If you say that you're going to give them a bottle of Coke if they do that, how can you expect to protect your secrets? Bottle of Coca-Cola. In other words, if you're going to give them a present rather than punish them, what's the point of classifying? The whole purpose of classifying is in order to protect. And the only way you can protect is to have an offense that will be a deterrent. Now, I thought, honorable members, we can get into the wording and you say, no, but this thing is not. But to say that espionage as an offense shouldn't be here, because I can tell you, perhaps you need to go there. High treason and all those other things are different offenses altogether. The definitions are different. They might look similar, but they are different. High treason always exists as an offense, notwithstanding the fact that we are trying to create an espionage. Now, honorable members, is the task too difficult? Because I have noticed the honorable longest wisdom and the honorable proceed.
Chairperson, if you'll allow me just to respond to the honorable Dean Smith, she's correct that the offences and penalties in the 2008 Act only refer to state information. But here we've changed it and narrowed it even further. I don't understand the complaint. Here in the present bill, we're speaking of unlawfully communicating, etc. State information classifies officers, as opposed to the 2008 version, which only spoke about unlawfully communicating and delivering state information. Good, then I misunderstood. My apologies. Chairperson, you are correct. The crime of espionage we've never had. I don't know why. If it were in my purview to change what is before, maybe I'd say, okay, let's create a statute dealing with espionage. But given that we've not had one and that we're dealing with classified classification, there's a requirement to prove my guilt. And the question of my suspecting that it was top secret is the point of that which I appreciate. Where I ought to have known, really,
standard provision. Perhaps it's in line with the systemic point. It says there on the document, top secret. So, you know, how can you say you didn't know? So Chair, we could look at that. I don't know why or suspect it was placed there. But other than that, Chairperson, we find nothing else quite wrong with the clause as it is.
Have the Honourable Abrasini, Fischler and Mania.
Truth be told, the crime of espionage goes beyond the disclosing of classified information. And we've got a bigger problem because this act tries to do all sorts of things that elsewhere are done by different pieces of legislation. And I open really a small parenthesis. Further down, you have a small five-line section requiring the registration of agents. Now, that is, in other countries, the United States, it's an entire law which defines what an agent is. Because an agent is somebody who acts on behalf of the government. And it's a law of about 50 pages. And it's not just the intelligence agent. It's any agent who lobbies, anyone who represents the government abroad, except the diplomatic people as defined by the Vienna Convention. So the same thing with espionage. Both espionage in its broader notion, as well as registration of agents, should have their own piece of legislation. They are thrown in here because here is the time, here is the deal. We don't have it, we should have it. So that's the first difficulty that must be acknowledged. That perhaps it's not that we should not have a crime of espionage. It should be done properly elsewhere, which is what I understood the Honorable Smart saying. As it is done in different places. One. Two. If we are going to have it, as you said, gave us leadership, let's draft it properly. I made my first point on suspected. There is another point which I would like to bring to your attention, and that's in respect of 3.1a as compared to B. There is a principle in law, in constitutional law, in human rights culture, that may be seen either. You can't be convicted twice for having done the same thing. This principle is often circumvented, and the circumvention is declared unconstitutional. When you take effectively what is one conduct, and you break it down in its components, and you charge the person for each of the components of a unified conduct. You can't charge, if somebody stabs somebody 53 times, you can't charge him 53 times for a stabbing. Nor can you design a crime where there is a crime for piercing the skin and the crime for piercing the organ, because the piercing of the organ requires the piercing of the skin, and so on and so forth. If you look at the difference between A and B, the difference, not as much in the word, but in the conduct that they relate to, it appears to be so small and the conduct so close that they fear that they create a double jeopardy problem. You cannot be in jeopardy twice for the same conduct. So my humble submission is that A covers it all, because you can't really deal with, you cannot commit B without having committed A. And doubling the penalty from 50 years just because you made a photocopy seems to be absurd.
My list indicates that it is the Honorable Fischler, and then the Honorable Mania, and then the Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
you know, if Norway was a welfare state, they say it was a welfare state, a peaceful state, it was never known about terrorism. Now, are you going to say that that country, therefore, in its security law, has never enacted a law of terrorism because there's never been any terror in their country? Estonia, if the two countries, let's say Israel is fighting against Arab countries, presently, if one individual there in Israel sells information to the Arab state and is caught, that espionage can be sentenced to death in this country. Now, if an individual in South Africa sells, let's say we have a secret weapon in the army, that we don't want to expose to the other countries, and then somebody sells that information to another country, that's espionage. So I don't think we have to wait until an offense does happen before we create a law. We create a law to prevent such incidents happening. We don't have to wait until it happens. We have to be the question of security means that in a country.
The Honorable Mania and then the Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Chair. On the first point made by the Honorable Smith and the Honorable Lampsini, I do believe that this espionage offence ought to be in the criminal law, but I'm not going to advance that argument, be that as it may. In terms of the original, in terms of the drafting before us, if you compare the description of the offence in the 2008 bill with the description of the offence in the 2010 bill, what is missing is the whole concept of intent. And we would propose that we introduce that concept into the description of the crime so that, for example, 32.1a would read to unlawfully communicate, deliver, or make available state information classified by top secret with the intention of directly benefiting another state. So that would be a proposal. If I recall correctly, the Honourable Ambrosini did touch on this point. And it is contained, as you all know, Chair, in our submission. The third point, Chair, is if we go back, I mean, we have to look at the mischief here. And if we go back to the Minister's presentation, he did touch on the whole question of espionage. But the problem, according to the Minister, was not what we've called here classic espionage. The problem was economic espionage. That was the mischief. Now, is it my reading is that we would cover the mischief, you know, in this term, economic espionage, the stealing of, for example, formulas from parastatals. We would treat that as classic espionage, and those kinds of offences would be catered under Clause 32. Now, it's just simply, I mean, stealing of formulas may benefit another country. It's more likely to benefit another company. And it's certainly the stealing of formulas is unlikely to affect national security. It is likely to affect the commercial viability of the entity. And so it would seem to me that in cases of economic espionage, it's a different kind of offense which would be punishable with certainly lesser sentence. And I think this is something we ought to look at.
Because the real difference, again, will you allow me?
The Honourable Swartz's opportunity first, and then...
Thank you. That's exactly the point that I was going to start on, and that is the issue of what is a benefit to another state. And it's interesting if one looks at the development of the Canadian model, where they deal with the espionage provision, and they've got specific offences there. There's a lot of emphasis as to the harm, the intent, and it's not so much the benefit of the other state, but the harm it causes to your state. And that is where a lot of the emphasis is placed. And I think, Chair, we could usefully look at that model as well, and look at whether the issue of having an alternative or putting in the, for example, we can look at this, but where that disclosure or the unlawful communication will increase a foreign state or a foreign body's capacity to harm South Africa's interests. That's the word they use in the Canadian model. Will create the foreign state or increase the foreign state's capacity to harm the Canadian interests. So there's a lot of emphasis on the issue of the harm that is created as opposed to the benefit to the other state. Because clearly, espionage creates harm to your state. And I don't have a problem with the creation of this. I think looking at the Canadian model, there's a lot of emphasis placed on that. But they distinguish between the espionage part of it and leakages. And there's quite a strong leakage there. And then they build in various defenses under that. But I think it's quite important for us to look at that model, and it's useful, where the intent or the unlawfulness, those elements of crime that we spoke about, as opposed to the generic benefit of another state, actually causes harm to your state. That's the harm test that we can deliberate on. Thank you, Chair.
For the record, to hold me out of order, you know, my fear at the explanation and what I'm following with will end up being too lenient when you look at who benefits then what has been done. So maybe through your guidance or through all of us, we need to check which one we want to entertain, because both of them. But what has been happening, what happened for me is important. Then the court can check who benefited. But what has been done for me is important. Otherwise, we'll end up saying, Hashem, she sold it to a woman who is selling potatoes. Therefore, that woman didn't benefit so much. So if I can get guidance.
Honourable Member, I think if you were going to look at the harm, if somebody steals your secrets and you worry about the harm it's going to cause to your state, I think that's really ridiculous. They shouldn't be stealing your secrets, first of all. They take it out of the country, or they sell it to some foreign state, or whatever the case. That is as far as you need to go to prove the crime. What is getting to harm, you're going to particularly...
I don't know if I can take it, but Chair, you can't say it's ridiculous. It's the Canadian model. How can you say it's ridiculous? I think, Chair, that we need to have...
It's not a point of order, sir.
Well, I can't take a point of order against you as the Chair, but I just want to object
with
that.
No, it's not a point of order, you're not raising... You might not like what I said, but then listen and you raise your hand and I'll give an opportunity to say. You can't I've not interjected when you people start discussing things.
What I was saying, I think I agree. If
we have a democracy to see if something is sold to another country that is hostile to what you, then that's the harm that is only caused by that particular information that is given in that country. It's not the question of benefit, it's the question of the harm. That's why you call it an espionage. That's why in other countries people are sending to death for that. If two countries are at war, then you sell information about the tactics of fighting that other country, then that's the harm. You don't harm the country. So that's the
thing. Honourable members, allow me to explain. You have now stolen the secret. You sold it to another country, and it has benefited that country tremendously. It has managed to develop whatever it is it wants to develop. And that harm might not, there might be no harm to your country. You could steal something, sell it, and it could actually have serious repercussions within your country. Now, if you want both scenarios, you can have both scenarios. But you just leave the harm one, would not be taken into account the fact that they should not have stole your secret in the first place and passed it on to another country, where there can be benefits there. It might not harm the country, but might harm your neighbors, your friends, or a whole range of other people. So what I'm saying is, if you want both, then put in both. You say that the offense will exist if it causes harm, or if it benefits another country. There's nothing wrong with that, but to just keep the harm one in would not be taken into account the fact that another country is being benefited.
I hear what you're saying, Chairperson. Ordinarily, I would agree with you. I've been trying to understand what was meant in both the espionage effect and the sorry to take it forward. But when members started talking about, as SWAT is, the harm done to the state, in 1233, which deals with hostile activity, that is precisely what it done. Clause is verbatim as it is in 32, except where in 32 it says would directly or indirectly benefit another state. 33 it says would directly or indirectly prejudice the state. So I don't know what the intention of the draft is. Well, we are told that this Clause 33, the hostile activity offenses law, is directed at our media. Now, taking into consideration your little debate now around the Canadian model and your comments about the harm to the state, I don't know why you chose to separate espionage from this hostile activity offenses, given your final comments around. It suggests that maybe the two could be combined, as you suggest, at the end of your
interview. I've got the Honourable Abrasini, then I've got the Honourable Swat, and I see that Mr. Glomer wants to be heard. Obviously, that will be with the permission of the committee. If there's any objection, Mr. Glomer will be heard.
Mr. Glomer spoke, I was terrified. So I hope this time will be gentle enough. I get scared easily. I mean, when he said that if you get something to the, if something gets leaked to the press needs to first bring it back to the police and then make application before it can publish. Now, my democratic conscience got scared. It happens to radical Democrats who believe in freedom, but that's not why I'm speaking. I'm trying to pick up where you left it, Mr. Chairman, and where the Honourable Landers took us far. We've got three categories here. We've got disclosure, and the disclosure is just taking a secret piece of information, a classified piece of information, and give it to somebody who doesn't have the security clearance to access it. Wow. Then, and that's the base. Then you've got espionage, where you do the same as disclosure, but the additional element is you give it to a foreign state. And then you have a hostile act, where the additional element is that of hurting the South African state. Now, there is a contradiction in this, because by definition, by classification criteria, conditions, and guidelines, you can only classify that which, if revealed, would hurt the state. So by definition, by criteria, by condition, any disclosure hurts the state. If it doesn't hurt the state, it shouldn't be classified.
Yes.
Well, it's one in comparison to the other. Yes, I'm talking also. The chairman said espionage activity, you must also consider the harm to the state, not only the benefit to the foreign state, but the harm to your own state. And the to which the Honorable Lander said, hey, wait a moment, the harm to the state is hostile activity. To which I say, hey, wait a moment, not true, hostile activity doesn't make any sense and needs to come out. So going back to where we started, espionage is benefiting the foreign state, and that's all that it can be. The hurting the state is implicit in the fact that you disclose something that the state kept secret in order not to be heard.
Honorable Swart,
Chair, I think I'm covered on the proposal to just look at the two concepts of the harm and the indirect benefit, and in particular after what Mr. Lander said about the next section 33 that refers to prejudice harm. We need greater clarity on that. So I think I've addressed you, although I was out of order on my objection to your usage of the word ridiculous. I think it is a valid consideration to look at the issue of prejudice and harm.
Now, before we get to you, earlier also whether the committee was prepared to
very brief. I just wanted to say that it is correct to observe that espionage is defined in the peace and hostile activity are closely related. The original concept was that espionage here would be focusing on the information being supplied to the state. Now you've noticed that in the post 9/11 world, the bigger element of threat no longer comes from state. So too do elements pertaining to the theft of information. Non-governmental actors have become very central in these activities. So when you steal information and you provide it to Al-Qaeda, the effect that it actually has that it prejudices the interest of the state. That's the point I just wanted to highlight. That the reason why you can't call it espionage, because in classical terms of intelligence lingo, that is understood to be referring to state, and hostile activity has been defined also in the Canadian Act, also deal with this new phenomenon of new threats that has emerged in the world, especially in the context of non-governmental threats or the just institutions.
I'd like to discuss hostile activities. Is that in order? I mean, the hostile activity offense, really the two flow, and they conceptualize that as the same. May I move to hostile activity offense?
Discussion on the espionage.
Well, then may I answer Mr. Gilmore's question? I think that's wrong, and I am going to move the deletion of hostile activity offense. If you want
your espionage appeal to apply to non-state actors declared terrorist entities, whatever, then do so. Then you adjust and you say to give advantage or to benefit another state or a non-state actor, blah, blah, blah. Then you do it then. You cannot now argue, because that is really not the origin of hostile activity, that just because we now have Al-Qaeda and other terrorist non-state entities, you must now also write this long-winded business with a similar sanction, but which will also impact a journalist. Very bad clause.
My point on A and B being too close, I don't think it's been addressed. I would like to see whether there is consensus that A and B cannot coexist.
A and B, yeah.
Under espionage, I'm not going to repeat the argument, the 3-1-A and 3-1-B, you cannot commit 3-1-B without having committed 3-1-A. So you make a photocopy, you end up with jeopardy.
What is 3-1-A? The clause is 32.
So it's 32-1-A and 32-1-B.
Cannot correct this white here? Sorry, okay.
Yeah. I don't agree with the Honorable FCD. Because in the B part, the wrongdoer is captured or he's copied the record that contains the top secret information. And and the idea is that he was intending to benefit another state, so he's actually caught red-handed. That's my understanding of the B part.
See, what you're describing is the attempt of a crime. In respect of each of all these crimes, there is the crime of attempt to do it. And that's under the criminal code. So those are covered as attempts. This is the crime. I thought it was self-evident. I didn't want to dwell into details, but you invite me to do so. In terms of B, you got a number of things, and each of them is separate. And you fry, if you make, you obtain, you collect, you capture, or copy a record. And these are or. Now, in order for you to communicate or deliver or make available in terms of A, you got somewhere, somehow in the process to either make, obtain, collect, capture. There are two, I mean, these are serious, as you said, these are not Mickey Mouse crimes. They're serious crimes. There is enormous amount of constitutional jurisprudence international about the double jeopardy thing. You cannot fragment the same conduct so that each piece gets sanctioned separately when it is one conduct. The crime here is to take and give. What you do in the process of doing that is part and parcel of that conduct. my humble submission is that be God, because you're going to take A, it's covered by A, and you cannot do B without doing A.
Intention to directly or indirectly benefit another state. Yeah, what I say, with the knowledge or intentionally, same thing.
This is not a specific intention crime, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't require the intention to benefit a state. It suffices that as a matter of fact, you know, or you should have known, that it benefited the state, even if you didn't intend it to cause that result. And, I mean, these are not matters of semantics. You know how many, you know, lawyers in court argue exactly this type of differences. And on this type of thing, people get acquitted or found guilty. Well, I'm not making a point. I'm just reading what this says. I'm giving a reading of the law. I think that it should be, I think it should be a specific intent crime. No? But if you want to make it a specific intent crime, you need to say with the intent of, over and above, with the knowledge and the intent. You must know that it will happen and you must will that result. It's the same thing with the all specific intent crimes, the difference between homicide and murder, etc., etc.
The question of intent. Does it have to refer to both the fact that the record is being obtained, collected, captured, or copied? Does it refer to that? And must it also refer to the fact that there was intention to benefit another state? Directly. Do you follow the question? Does the intent? Because two things are happening here. You're making a copy which you're not supposed to do. And then you haven't passed it on yet, but you are intending to benefit another state. I would imagine in the second instance that it's implied, but how do you read it?
We believe that the clause of the two paragraphs are different, and that most probably in A it will be the intent clause, the intent aspect will be more related to that specific issue than in the B one. As you say, that will be implied, but there is for us a difference between the two paragraphs, and definitely the intent would relate to paragraph A.
The question I put to you in paragraph B. Paragraph B. Would the intent apply to the collection or copying action? And must it also apply to the fact that that you're going to benefit another state? My view on the matter is that it must be implied in the second, it must be implied that you intend to benefit another state. But how do you read it?
It doesn't really mean that it must imply that it must benefit another state.
From a drafting point of view, then, would it be wrong, or would the drafting style be lopsided if you were in fact to word it in that fashion, so that, that it's quite clear that the intent applies to the collection or the capturing part, and if it applies to the benefiting another state part.
Because in our reading paragraph B, it's actually by having the copy of the record containing the state information. That's our reading of paragraph B. So the intent, as you say, is implied in paragraph B.
This is what I'm putting. From a drafting point of view, would it be wrong rather than have it implied to include it, the intent, so that it's actually visible?
Mm-hmm. Can I just give us some? We'll consider it and come back to you. Can we just have a discussion amongst us?
Honorable Conrad?
Jeffers and I'm not sure about this, but I would like to get in my mind, if you're not supposed to make a copy of it, the mere making of the copy is a problem. And it is reason enough for somebody with a security clearance to do that. That's the way these things work, if I'm not mistaken. So there are two things here. One is, you've made the copy, you're not supposed to make the copy. The intent, what you want to do with it, is something sensitive. But the fact that you've made the copy is already in itself an offense. Well, why did you make the copy? Normally within intelligence communities it would be seen as espionage. The mere fact that you've made that copy would be seen as espionage.
Honorable Abrasini.
Jeremy, if I can give you some real life reality. The conduct described here happens every day in each and every minister's office. All the cabinet memoranda are marked top secret. And they all get photocopied. They go one copy to the minister, one copy to the deputy minister, one copy to the advisor, one copy to the director general, one copy to the deputy director general. You know that. The secretaries do that. They do extra copies. So if the activity of copying documents per se, and those documents float around, it's quite loose, and it happens. So it must be specific in state. Copying per se a document without the authority to do so, because those who make copies don't have top secret security clearance. That's the reality now. They should, they don't. There is no notion of sanitarizing the handling of documents.
Chair, I think Mr. Ambrosini made my argument when he said without the authority to do so. The clause reads to unlawfully make. Now, the official who is assisting the cabinet and makes the copies for all the members of cabinet and anyone else who's present is doing so lawfully with authority. And therefore you cannot then say, well, he also must be charged and prosecuted. There's a difference.
Honorable clarify, I want a clarification. Lawfulness is having this also, it's also having the security clearance. If you take a document in your hands and you don't have the security clearance to handle it, you're committing a breach.
The Honorable Fichler, can Honorable Fichler
make a difference between between departments that are sensitive? You can't make a copy of a top secret document in the police. You can't make a copy of a top secret document in the intelligence. You can't make a copy of a top secret document in the defense. But you can make a copy in the other departments. Because they are secret documents. They are not top secret documents. They are not as sensitive as documents that you find in the defense. And that's different.
Honorable Van Beck?
I think the Honorable Fickler is actually hitting the nail on the head. The fact of the matter is, and I think that's part of the problem we have here, is the understanding of what we are talking about and the way it practically operates. If a document is not passed on from one person to another person without the person who is passing it on, record of that being kept. I mean, it sounds silly, but even making copies would be recorded. And I think we're not taking all these things in consideration. We're not talking about the Department of Arts and Culture. We're talking about top secret documents. We're talking about the handling of those documents in a prescribed manner. I take the file, it's got a top secret, Johannes got a top secret, clearance, I've got a top secret clearance, I hand the file over to Johannes. There will be record of the fact that I've handed this file over to Llewellyn on top of that file. And then Llewellyn has Sifil, because Sifil's also got top here, secret here. There will be record of Llewellyn handing it over to Sifil. There will be a trace record kept of this document the whole time. So we're not talking about just any document. Well,
this
is
all
in deep trouble.
I won't give it to you. You won't get it. Honorable members, I'm not interested in your money. Honorable members, what the Honorable Van Wyk was talking about is the distribution list. If you look at the classified document, you will see it will have a distribution list at the back. And it will tell you exactly how many copies has been made. It will tell you exactly who has got the copy. And we won't tell you anything more that is on the document. And when the document leaks, you will know exactly whose copy it is that is leaked. Yes. If you make a copy of it, and the copy comes here, you will know exactly who it is, whose copy it is, that, or whose original it is that copy came from. And then you'll have to answer how it is. There's not a stack of copies made perhaps what was missing from the Honorable Abrasini's explanation of how these things were was the distribution list. If he was talking about a classified document that was properly classified and copies were being made, then the copies that were being made are actually originals and it's part of the distribution list. And each person that gets a copy will see that Mr. Rand has got one, Birch has got one. Okay. There's no spare copies for the media. There are no spare copies for the postman. Everybody that is entitled to get the copy will get an original one. That is the distribution list. But honorable members, when the more I look at this 32A and 32B, this is the pride of your country. This is really the crime of your country. You should be proud of you. You should not protect the wrongdoers, all the unlawful persons. Your country is asking you now, once and for all, to create a proper crime so that those people can be punished, because these things have been going on for many, many years. People have been stealing our secrets. You just don't know about it. So I don't see, because I don't get anything concrete here that says this thing is totally wrong. The thing is saying here, you sell it to somebody else, another state, you're in serious trouble. The other one says you're busy making these copies unlawfully, you know you shouldn't, and you're in the process or you plan to do that, you're going to be punished. It's espionage. If you just made that copy in the normal course of business, like a copy, and you don't, you know, it's another matter, because the state would have to prove in the second case that the intention was to pass the thing on another. So you haven't actually passed it on yet, as in the first case. But you actually have passed it on. In the second instance, you caught. But you had the same intention as you would have done in the first case. But now you get caught. And you should be no different. Because, you know, it's just good luck now that you got caught before you actually passed it on. But your intention was exactly the same. We caught you on the border with your case, briefcase, all the documents in there. And bring you back. Now, you know, there could have been a national tragedy. So why should that crime be any less than the one that actually got away and actually sold it? It's the same crook. Honorable Appleseed.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps you can help me. I have a difficulty as a legislature. On many occasions during these deliberations of ours, you've made a statement that there are all sorts of things which are happening all the time, and we do not know about it. Yet we are called upon enacting legislation to stop them from happening. Yes, I do not know of any significant act of espionage against the Republic of South Africa. You do inform us that these things happen all the time. Now, if there are secrets of the Republic of South Africa which have been conveyed to a foreign country, we as members of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa may very well know it as well. I mean, if the foreign country knows it, we can also be informed. So I would really request that if you could give us a presentation over the past 20 years, what secrets of South Africa have been the object of espionage, so that we have a sense of how serious this problem is. It is not uncommon to tailor sanctions to the severity of the problem. And we need to know whether we are just dealing with a potential threat which has not materialized and is theoretical, or an ongoing phenomenon. You suggest it's an ongoing phenomenon. If you can tell us concretely at the next meeting what it is, at least it would help me in doing my job.
Honourable members, I get the impression that the honourable members are trying to ridicule me, but I don't have concrete information. Honourable members, I can see you getting tired and hungry. I'm not here to come. You know what espionage is. You watch movies all the time. You read the newspaper. You know, I don't have to tell you what espionage is. If you don't know what espionage is, those of you that have not heard of espionage, can you raise your hands? Honourable member, I'm talking, please, ma'am. You haven't heard of espionage. Have you heard of the word espionage? Do you know what it means? Do you know what espionage means? You know what it means? Okay. Now, do you know, honorable members, can you pay attention? Honorable members, am I released off my chairmanship here? But I was still talking. I knew I was interfered with, but I thought it was a coup taking place here. What we are busy with here, honorable members, and I've said this earlier, I'm not going to dwell on this thing long. If you want to protect your secrets, you have to have a crime if somebody messes around with it. Okay? Now let's forget the debate, how many espionage cases I know of. You have agreed, and you've spent lots of time here looking at how to classify your secrets. So your secrets have now been properly classified. You need now to protect them. You need to protect them in a responsible manner. The first problem you're going to have is with those people that are going to steal your secrets and sell it to somebody else. Okay? And that's why this crime is top of the list. That's why this is the first crime you're dealing with, because that's the first big problem you have. Once you have classified your secrets, people are going to want to try and steal it and sell it. Those are what counter, that's what counter espionage, that's what counter, that's how the intelligence world works. People steal. They bribe your agents, and eventually they brainwash them, and eventually your own agents turn. So, just understand, once you have secrets, people are very curious, and others are very anxious to get them, and they will steal them. Now you need to protect them, that's the first crime we're dealing with. Now tell me that that doesn't cover, and that you don't think the secrets are so serious, they shouldn't go to jail for 25 years, or whatever the case is. Just get your mindset right on what it is you're trying to do here, because I think you're missing the point what it is you're trying to do here. You have agreed. You have agreed now in the process of this past year that you will work towards creating a piece of legislation that will allow for classifying secrets. And your secrets, if you classify it, it means nothing to you. It's just a document or a database that has got top secret enclosed in it. But it's got no value to you. You cannot protect it unless you're going to punish those people that mess around with it. Mm. Otherwise, you might not even have, you might not have, well, have secrets. No, but get the mindset right, because I think you're deviating from what it is we're trying to achieve here. If you agree that secrets that you want to classify in order to protect from disclosure, that's the principle, then you must punish those people that start messing around with it. I saw the Honourable Landers and the Honourable Van Wyk.
And then, Jefferson, it's quite clear we're not going to agree with one another on this particular offence and Clause 32. I'm really amazed that Mr. Ambrosini demanding statistics on the number of crimes of espionage that were tried in Russia.
There's none, because we've never had a crime of espionage. That's the point we made, and perhaps when we speak, Chair, you should concentrate on what we're saying rather than what is on his laptop. No, he doesn't listen, Jefferson, because if he had listened, he would have heard us say South Africa has never had the crime of espionage. And so,
if you should listen, I didn't ask about the crime, I asked about the occurrence, the fact.
Well, how can we be an occurrence if there's no crime of espionage?
He says it happens all the time.
Of course it does.
I want to hear.
If the Honorable Ambrosini wants to know the extent of espionage, let him Google it. Yes. Google it. Your colleague's nodding his head. Just Google espionage there, and it'll tell you wherever and wherever it happens throughout the world, and the extent. You know that.
Honourable members, I'm going to hear the Honourable Van Wyk, and we're going to break. Honourable Van Wyk?
It's fine now to say we know that, but that's not what has been said throughout now. Throughout, it's been saying, well, you know, you've been challenged to tell us what these cases are. That's the truth of the matter. You've been challenged by the Honourable Ambrosini, supported by the Honourable Mania, that you need to tell us what are these issues that you're talking about. Which in itself is a bit insulting, yeah. The fact of the matter is that South Africa was involved in espionage cases throughout the world. Yeah? There's an example in the United States of Pollock that was convicted for spying for the South African apartheid government, releasing American defense information, espionaging for the apartheid government. That's why I think the Honorable... He was. The fact of the matter is the honourable Landers is not that wrong when he says the Honourable Ambrosini must actually just do this. I mean, he loves to Google. just check a bit on how many Espinel cases there are, in fact. Google. No, the fact of the matter is, I mean, what do we want to do? Do we want to wait that it that it actually happened, and then say, why didn't we think about it? Sorry? I'm just asking, do we want to wait for it to actually happen and say, well, now we don't have legislation where we can actually, we've got to do it on a lesser offense. We've got to take this person's trial on a lesser offense. We don't have torture legislation. You know what happens? Police officers that torture goes to court and the assault trial. And the point is why? Because we know now that we need to have torture legislation. Do we want to wait for this to happen and then say, if only we had Espinel legislation?
The Honourable Mania, I didn't recognize it yet. Honourable Mania is on my list. And then after that, the Honourable Swat. And then after that, the Honourable Stripper. And then nobody after that.
When do I
know? After.
The Honourable Amrassini's question was about the instance of espionage. Now, the Minister, during his presentation, to some extent addressed this question, and he did not, in my view, present a convincing case that there was a major threat of espionage in the country. He did suggest that there was a major threat of economic espionage, which is a different matter, and it's something that we should consider. The last two points on a lighter note, I think that Pollock was convicted for spying for the state of Israel, and second of all, Chair, I think we should take a break. I need a martini shake.
Chair, I think you've made some concrete suggestions on improving the espionage offence in 42, one of which was to add the words including the intention, with the intention of. Secondly, it was to add the possibility of the harms test. And I think, Chair, from my side, I see no harm in this offence, the offence, the espionage offence. I think it is necessary. I've looked at the Canadian model. Set out there as well. It's a reality, and I think we need to deal with it. The problem is the fact that we are relying on a common law situation of high treason, and we need to make sure we've got the full element of the crime on a legal technical basis, and that's why I would suggest we look at that, inserting the words with the intention of, as well as looking at not only the indirect or benefit, but also the harm. Add in that, and I think let's move forward. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Stubber. Can we have your mic, please, on?
Chair, one thing we must take in consideration is that if we look at information classified as confidential, can't carry the same weight something that's secret or top secret. In something that's confidential, I write to you a note and I put confidential on that. And we must seriously look at that. The Honourable Swartz mentioned it right in the beginning, and I just plead that we don't lose that one.
Honourable members, we stand adjourned until. Can you look
at the various definitions of espionage in the Dublin jurisdiction, I'm sure the Honourable Mr. Dionne Nanto is still on his database. State law advisor, can you also help us? We just want to see, most countries have got a espionage thing. We just want to see how the wedding goes in different jurisdictions. And then I think we can continue that debate, because I think when we adjourned for dinner, it's clear that we were beginning to exhaust our ideas on the matter. It was in a certain official purpose to continue, because the arguments and discussions were becoming circular. That was my understanding. So I think before we continue that discussion on very important, I mean, this is really the gold medal of the defense, and we really need to get this one right. This is really the supreme defense in terms of what is captured here. So we need to get that one right. Perhaps what I am proposing is a way out of continuing the discussion now. Really, I'm not getting further about it. We are lacking in additional information, and so perhaps we can continue that debate if we are able to get. I think it's a question of just looking at the statutes in other countries and just without getting into explanation, just see what do they capture under the definition of experiments, and we can have a look at that. So can just say, if you can just capture the jurisdiction also that you believe it from. It also sounds, but remember sometimes that they, sometimes where the offense is defined, the sentence is not necessarily there. You might have to back part of the statute to get the sentence. We would also be interested in what type of sentence the different jurisdictions are. That is, if you have framed for such a proposal, I think this can be moved on to clause 13, and I think that the Honourable Smith is the place to talk on it, and I'm not sure that we'll have the Honourable Lawrence.
Thank you so much. Chair, you have said a couple of times tonight that when you create a classification regime, it follows that you create an offence to make sure that that classification regime is observed, respected, and created a theorem to people who seem to infringe it. We reserve our position on what we will say to you on possession and disclosure. But what I want to argue is that your offence, creating the deterrent, is the offence of disclosure, which carries 5 years sanction. And also, in the draft of 30 articles, you've got the article, also the offence of possession, which likewise carries a maximum 5 years sanction. The question is, what is the hostile activities offences doing here? And I want to suggest to you that I found the answer when I was looking at the 2008 Act and at the explanatory memorandum commentary. Because the hostile activity offences in the original thinking of the drafters did not deal with classified information, just as espionage did not deal with classified information. They both applied to state information, which is any information in the hands of the state, under the old Clause 5 of the 2008 Law. So it seems to me like they were really creating a third tier. Your offences for classified information are possession and disclosure. This was a kind of a third tier, which dealt not with classified information, but with any information. And I think that was reason for existence. And I think it's the only thing that explains it, because what otherwise is the difference? between possession and disclosure and the thing called hostile activity offense. What now, in circumstances where we have made it applicable to classify information, is its function? And how is it different from possession and disclosure, which are already criminalized at 5 years? And the only difference I can discern, if this is also applicable to classified information, is the concept of prejudice to the state. But information is already classified on the basis that it harms the national security and thereby the state. So what is the difference between prejudice to the state, which is undefined, as opposed to harm to the national security, which on anyone's definition is supposed to protect the Republic and the people of South Africa? And so the more I looked at it, the more it seemed to me an utterly superfluous thing, which only came into existence because they were dealing in that old soul with all state information, which is why they also had the national blah, 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 the commercial stuff, etc. I think that this has no reason for existence, no reason for existence. And it's a weird thing that after two ad hoc committees and two versions of the bill, none of the people making submissions, as far as I remember, and not even any of us said, but hang on, what on earth is a hostile activity offense? We have said before that at minimum we must arrive at a definition of prejudice to the state, and we pointed to the Canadian law, which I think is the same thing that Steve Spark was pointing to. But I now want to put a revised position that we in fact strike this thing out, take it out, because it deals with classified information, and I don't see how one lot of classified information, when communicated and obtained, simply on the basis that it's purportedly prejudice of the state, carries a 25-year imprisonment sanction, whereas the crimes of position and disclosure carry 5 years, and they are, after all, classification also rests on harm to the state. Thank you.
enough for that is useful. But may I just say there is a difference in others with burden on our side. And in fact, the burden is in this house.
Honorable Swartz. Honorable Swartz is turning to the dark. And the question is come to you.
No, fine. 100%. I just, I'm also struggling to understand the context of 30P in hostile activity offense. If you read it with 32, the espionage offense. Because here, what is one, the wording is exactly the same as the whole of 32, except for the concept of prejudice the same. So, we're not actually defining a hostile activity or information pertaining to a hostile activity. We are saying, in other words, that to unlawfully communicate information is a hostile activity. And I think, and that's exactly what we're saying in 32. We say the exact same word. We say it's unlawfully, and that to me is espionage. We unlawfully communicate, deliver, make available state information. That's the 32.1. And that's why we say directly benefit another state or cause harm or prejudice. What the Canadian model does, which I've got in front of you, exactly the same terms as, it's totally different to this formulation where it says 15.1, the head of a government may refuse information relating to the detection, prevention, or suppression of subversive or hostile activity. And then they define hostile activity as espionage, sabotage, terrorist attack, and those specific hostile acts. So what we are doing here is in fact, there is a definition. So I think what we're on the same page, that I fully appreciate the need for the hostile activity, but not as the formulation stands, which is a communication of a classified document, which that divulsion or the disclosure of that confidential document does not amount to hostile activity. And I think that is the reason we need to deliberate a little bit of content.
Under 16.
16. That didn't help us because, you know,
Away. Instead of hostile activity,
take the hostile heading away. The question I put to you, I think, is does those clauses unfitly constitute an offence? I would feature on my theory of this right now. Does it constitute an offence? So, I hear from my colleagues on the online that it does constitute an offence. Those of you that want to answer will get an opportunity to answer. I've heard whispers here that does constitute an offence. The other question I would put to you, in which way does 33 differ from 32? As the Honourable Swat has said, that it's only the word prejudice that is repeated throughout 33. That is the big difference, that is the only difference. Otherwise, the wording is exactly the same, including the sentences for the various offence in 33 as you go. It starts at 25 and ends in the same way that the punishment ends in your espionage. Is there another difference?
Five years. But if that If that disclosure hurts the state, then it gets much more, whatever it is under 31. Then the additional point which makes it more irrational, that we're talking about prejudice to the state. Now the word prejudice is used technically. Is finding yourself worse off in respect of any given position, procedurally, using procedure of the time in terms of substantive rights, as in respect to the position you would be in, had the action not taken place. This I stand for a prejudice. And that's the very prejudice that we have in section 16, clause 15, for the avoidance of which we classify the information. And then there is the issue directly or indirectly. So if we look at prejudice, directly or indirectly, this threshold is the same threshold for which information is classified. If I'm wrong, please tell me that I'm wrong and where I'm wrong.
Thank you.
has incorporated in the two at the moment. If you look at this state as it is incorporated, but you look at the word prejudice as it appears in the combine the crime of espionage by inserting those crimes into the government that you do. Apply and create young offense. It should be difficult. I think the answer might be lying in defining this thing as the old man took the public of the left as opposed to in agreement that this can be a heightened spine. 54. Do you have to check any improvement?
Consequential of any.
Can I hear the honorable longer than any honorable sir?
Just the minimum sentence provision. Ask me to move. And everywhere we move the minimum sentence provision, chair, the word subject.
Yeah.
might be similar. What would it say? In the sense that, I'm just saying, of course, think at the 32 and 33. This thing is specifically referring to the history of the term.
There is somewhere, I couldn't tell you where, but I can tell you that I've seen it, a definition of, I can't the exact term, I will give a term which is not correct, but it's basically completely after the act, in respect of all crimes. So if you do exactly this type of activity, you are an accomplice after the act, and the provision of peace.
Honorable members, it seems that this offense is general somewhere else, and you might not be there. It seems that it might be specific, because referring to the honorable fund register, which you might have seen it somewhere.
I think we must be careful to what we're doing now, say general summary by the government. We just think we want to look at it. Honourable thing says that there's a general offence somewhere in the court. And I think there's also a difference. I remember the Honourable Rogers and maybe else me, because we were on that committee together for the joint committee, that a lot of thought went into the dark of that specific one way. During the first room, things came out about God with my son and my daughter or something like that. So I really, really think one needs to look at that one as well. And I hear what you say about Mary's calibre was 18 or not, but we're also talking about hostile activity, which can be a terrorist act. We're also talking about atheism. We're talking about other acts of role players, etc. So maybe all we're asking is that the state law advisors look for us going on then on the amendment on the understanding that we revisit this clause and see that it necessary to return. We are on clause 35 on the amendment.
And there is some 35, 36, yes. Okay, I'm going to give you my comment. And on 35.3, it relates to program. I want to go to this at great length, but basically it relates to computer programs designed to overcome security measures. I would like to have specifically designed, because something can be designed but not specifically for different services. There are lots of programs that we
Adding the word the time specifically before the word of time. Which is time. Because you know, everything is a derivative in computer science, everything is a derivative of something else. And every program is a platform of something else. So platform. Then on 4, I have a problem with this crime. And I suggest that any person who and we have intentionally and knowingly utilize any device or computer program mentioned in Section 3 in order to unlawfully overcome security measures. Again, in this there is no indication of what degree of mens rea is required. It does happen every now and then again, it could be my child, it could be your child, that people get through it with intentional people on the other side. Intention, but they don't know that they're there, or they might do it knowingly but without the intention. So I think both the elements are necessary. So these are my two suggested amendments on 3, on 3 and on 4.
The Republic of South Africa has adopted a policy on the use of open source technology as opposed to proprietary systems like Microsoft. And the entire thinking is that it's good for people everywhere, for the sharing of information, wisdom, good for democracy, good for everything. That they have open source programming where people constantly pick out the items in the material so that they can update them if the channel will allow. So that you can constantly improve both the software. But then also, it goes beyond that. It goes to the open swapping of information. Now, the Republic has committed to open content, not only open source. It's committed to the technology. It has, in addition, committed to open content. And I asked a question to the new Minister of Communications not 2 months ago, in which it confirms that this is still the case. They made certain qualifications about experience. But this is the big news, because in the US, in New York, specifically in Australia, the tradability of state information is now being encouraged by people write competitions, cities and countries write competitions to say, yeah, we are making available our entire database on the kind of information that have about citizens. Our entire database is on this, that, and the other. See what you can do by combining them, alright? It holds intrinsic dangers also for privacy, but the whole drift in this era is towards open content, putting as much as possible in the public domain. You are the state. It is the big trend. And the Cameron government in the UK also holds the same position. So that I think has to be brought into consideration if it becomes like some tool. information while criminalizing the unlawful overcoming of security measures to drive the sex. I guess the answer, and I'm sorry to be thinking about this, I suppose if you explicitly and intentionally push in security measures, then hopefully you have a reason why you want to keep the information. And I suppose you should discourage people from unlawfully overcoming that. Let me rest it there, okay, but I would like to think about it some more. But we are in the era of open context that are public institutions to it, with the qualification that when it comes to security,
and the same would apply to classified information. Yeah. You should protect them from those other things too. What does it protect them from? It's close if somebody's ready to switch off your computer and use this information. So the same protection would be afforded to classified information that you can afford to gather information in terms of loss of operation and destruction. Now, I'm just asking you to keep that in mind when you start discussing around it, because some of these things are, that's why I think the word state information is either not sensitive information or classified information or valid information, because state information
for that. Engaged
In fact, in 2009 and 2010, during the budget, both of the intelligence services were invited to very rare. Normally, this is not done by other intelligence services. They invited intelligence services that are registered with the South African government to participate in the budget, both of the intelligence services, and to invite members of the JFBI and Parliament.
Other than that, it seems to me that there is an agreement that goes as far as not far from being accepted.
In the old days, in the 19th century, they were part of a foreign territory. Now they are provided with immunity. Their local territories are provided with international immunity under the Vienna Convention. Both the South African territories are based off international law, a military base of wherever they are. My colleagues can go into process 6. On the discharge, we have to be
under what circumstances was a foreign operator that operates in South Africa undercover? See, that surely it doesn't happen in practice. And in some countries, you would go and register yourself would be the death sentence upon yourself. But I mean, is it something that that it would ever happen. I mean, are we not kidding ourselves? And I understand that's why you created the offense. But surely you are going to have nobody come in and open his say, please register myself. I'm a spy. Register.
I will get back to you on the meeting. I must do that. We check the protocol. Interpol or CIC agency work with RIT and international projects where they're part of the system, international system. Those agents will come here and they will be able to join the agency. They will not be allowed to come here and just move around. The same will happen with RIT. You want to be heard on the main of the number?
Sure, I mean, I think there might be something else to you on your application position. I would be interested in hearing Mr. Berner on this issue. The question is, I mean, I can understand that it may be our intention to ensure that foreign intelligence agents are registered, but it's possible that this could also cover
honorable skipper?
Change the text of the matter. In every office mission that we have, there is the claimed spies. They are the claimed as intelligence workers, and they are made known to the country and their country. And those people who work there, and the people who work there without knowledge, that's what you call a spy. He's not in the mission. You will never be in a mission. So he's working outside the mission, under a covert structure or whatever you call it, but there is people, and you can look at a nice place to look at for them as the second secretary.
Yeah, I'll remember if you watch the more recent film, you'll read the more recent newspapers, and you look on the internet, you'll get this information freely available. And those that are working, come that you don't know that, they sometimes come and they sit here and they shake their hands. They're all of you, they don't know who they are. And when they leave here, they go and report. They go and report them, they leave here, and they say that the people are missing.
Some of them say they've given some away by saying their life has been shaken and not
seen. Honourable members, this is really just bringing this in line with the international practice. No. And until you say to those people, to register or else we. Unless they are caught in some other activity, the ones that are registered normally operate under diplomatic immunity. Unless they're doing something deal. But you cannot punish the other ones, the non-registered ones, unless. And the offense is not too serious.
Finally, we've got everything getting uncomfortable with the way we're going.
Honourable, I was thinking you sneak out here now that.
I used to suggest that we
trying to finish when we need it in a bit earlier, that so that we can give them to main meal and not see if it's going up to a movie, an ice cream movie, where some of these things are covered.
Honourable members, I have been advised that the Honourable Room wants to hear everything. Yes, correct. Honourable members, can you hear?
Captain, I just thought that I should make a very simple and practical example of what is out there in the open. And you'll be aware that in the past 5 years, I've been working as the first secretary of the Committee of Intelligence and Security Services of Africa. When we went to Addis Ababa, the first thing that happened was that we had to be accredited by the African Union as employees of the African Union. The African Union then applied to the government of Ethiopia to actually accredit us as diplomats. But they knew that in our wedding, I, the executive secretary of the Committee of Intelligence and Security Services of Africa, there were a number of people equally displaced from other African countries. We then employed local staff to establish the office. And that's normal practice. When you go to a country, through the diplomatic, normal diplomatic process, the application before you land them. If they learned about you and your problems that you've given to other countries, they will quietly refuse to accept you. So you'll never get an opportunity to go there and declare yourself. But if they should accept, the day will come, you go and present your credentials, they will accept you, and from time to time they will invite you for briefings, they will give you information about what's going on in the country. They will ask you questions about what's happening in your own country. They will ask you to provide them with information that they need. They will ask for training programs, all sorts of things which normally are kept out in an agreement but signed between the two countries that are seconding the personnel. Or if it is not countries, those who are members, in my case, I was working for an organization that represented 50 African countries at the end of 2010. So you would then use that infrastructure to formally register and to interact on the formal basis. Obviously, we all know that people are not just there to do the live work. They also do some other work outside of the office. This is understood. And that is why when you cross the line, then there would be what they call the declaration of the person, the persona non grata. Most of the time, that happens because people have got diplomatic cover. But where relations sour up, you know, they might decide to leave the immunity and go on an all-out war, especially on those who are not based in the area, that Honorable Sever spoke about, that those would be working outside of that. Their operations and already detected and they didn't have confirmation information. We recall that honorable member, at the end of the Cold War, a number of countries exchanged their own files in order to make sure that they would be peaceable calling on them. And so that happens from time to time. The registration part is really an everyday existence. As I said, we've also invited registered intelligence officers to participate in parliamentary activities. They engage openly with members of parliament, and sometimes they help us know who they are working with in their hands because they tend to take along. I think I should stop there.
I'm quite intrigued about the question I'm presenting to Natasha. In the current, if you like, situation, are all defense attachés registered as spies with the agency? I can't believe that's true.
So
may we either roll over them someday or
Otherwise, you can do it just on Monday.
Now, can I get some before I close the meeting? I'll close the meeting. If I am told that we will meet on Monday, or if we will meet on Saturday, or if we
will meet on Monday. Chairperson, we that there will be those members who won't be able to meet with us on Monday. That's unfortunate. Unavoidable.
What I would say is that if there is general consensus that on a member, what I will try is by tomorrow to give you some idea of the work that will be covered on Monday, so that if you do have a proposal, perhaps also give you the assurance that we won't close anything up on the way that we do on Monday, something like that. So we will not be able to do it for your input, those are the way that might be here. But political parties have got delegates here. I would imagine that you need to reconcile your ideas on what's happening. While I have allowed thinking and free intervention of political parties, because I believe you as a member of the committee, you don't necessarily member of a political party, I think that if you can reconcile your ideas or your proposals or your views on a particular clause, then tomorrow will help you if we were able to say on Monday we'll give you this, so that those members of those parties that have got more than one member will be able to at least have a discussion with you about it over the weekend. Would that help on the
Honourable Constable? Honourable Chair, with respect, if you're not going to close the discussions on Monday and keep it open for those who's not going to be there, for those who's going to be here, it's going to be a waste of time, because it's going to open the debates again.
Perhaps I've not been precise enough on the book. I did say that for those of you that were not here, and here I'm referring to those people that are single members of a political party, we have, your party, we've got four people here. Surely we can reconcile what it is you want to say and should be difficult. But if the Honourable Swat is not going to be here, what I'm saying, don't have you want to close the door on him and the council if he wants to make a contribution. But that's not going to drive you an opportunity to change your view on what it is. Yeah, well, then you'll say, but we took a view on Monday that we're not changing it. I think that is the understanding of the members. Then we can we adjourn till 9:30 tomorrow? 9:30. It's just, if you feel 9, I'm quite happy to be at 9. I just think that it is late, and perhaps 9:30 will give you more time to recover. So we stand adjourned then, honourable members, 3454, 9:30.